Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. We continue this evening with our focus on the New York City subway system. It runs more than 8,000 trains for nearly 6 million customers around the clock, more track than any other subway line. The system is 113 years old. It's the oldest in the world, with average track laid down 40 years ago. Today, the New York City Council members demanded answers from the MTA at their Transportation Committee hearing. But at the hearing where the MTA asked the city for more funding, the newly appointed MTA chair, Joe Lotto, wasn't there. Instead, he sent in Ronnie Hakeem, the MTA manager, and budget director Doug Johnson. Councilmember Jemani Williams, says Lotto not being present was disrespectful. Here he is questioning Hakeem and then Johnson.
Where's the chairman?
I think the chairman had a conflict this morning, but so, I'm glad to be here on his behalf.
I'm glad you're here, but it's disrespectful. Now, he's all over TV. Carrying the governor's water, who I also think is full of it on these issues. And I think if he wants to ask us for funding, he should be here and ask himself. And so if he has a conflict, he needs to decide which is more important. So if he's going to be all over TV carrying the governor's water and screaming and yelling about what we're not doing, I think he should be here. Wouldn't you?
I'll pass that along.
What do you think?
I'm glad to be here. I think this discussion has been very comprehensive and provide as much information as I can.
The issue I have is because all the cameras are there because of the political machinations that's going on. Both the mayor and the governor have played it. However, in this particular item, well, in a lot of it, I think a lot of items, the governor needs a high-fiber diet. I've said that before. It is unfair for him to take pictures in the Second Avenue subway. It is unfair for him not to even invite the mayor until a couple hours before, take charge of that, and then say he doesn't control the MTA. And so I think the people generally don't care who controls it, and I understand that they just want it to be fixed. But we have to have that discussion, because I also think it's unfair to ask us for additional money. And if you see, there was an article by former Assemblyman Jim Brennan. I don't know if you saw it. It was in the Gotham Gazette. It was fantastic. It broke down how much money we actually give. And under his research, it's about 1% that comes outside of the MTA region. So we pay for almost everything, including the offices that are there. So I'm not opposed to additional money, but I am opposed to having a false equivalency that 50-50 is where it's at when we don't control it. So I need to understand from your point of view, who has the most control over the MTA? Is it the state or is it the city?
There is a governance structure of the MTA. As you know, I report to the chairman and CEO of the MTA, as well as to the board, and obviously to the nearly 8 million customers. 6 million of them are subway riders, and am held accountable by the chairman and the CEO and that board. The board has members appointed by the governor. The board is also has members appointed by the mayor. But from my perspective.
So how many are appointed by the mayor?
Four.
Out of how many?
Out of 14 votes.
So out of 14 votes, I'm hoping this is covered here, because they're playing this game. I will say that the governor's playing it brilliantly because he knows people are confused. But out of 14 votes, the mayor gives four. How many does the city council give?
I don't think there's a direct.
Donut. We give zero. So the city has four out of 14. So where in that structure is there an equivalency of 50-50?
No, I think the issue is where in the provision of services is there a benefit to the city of New York for the robustness of the New York City.
I understand
system.
That, but you're asking us for additional money. We don't have additional oversight. We don't have additional control. So obviously there is more service in New York City, but we're saying that it is a state. So if we have a creature of the state, it is all beneficial to the state. And if we are providing the vast, vast majority of the funding now, do not have nearly as much say-so in the governance of it. And Joe Lotto, who I actually think is good for the job, but right now he's being disrespectful to this city, disrespectful to this city council, while carrying the false equivalency water of the governor, is not even here to ask for the money. But he can be on TV as many times as he wants. He can say a lot of foolishness about what he thinks the false equivalency is and not even be here to ask us. And you're telling me that we should be 50-50 in a partnership with no additional governance, no additional oversight. There is no other agency that we can't compel the person who runs that agency to be here. Please explain to me where the 50-50 comes in.
Before we go into the money, please permit me to say that Chairman Loda means no disrespect to you or the other members.
Whether he does
or not,
that's what I saw.
I just wanted to be clear on that.
If he didn't mean disrespect, he should have been here. Out of all the times and all the hysteria that's going on, this was the time for him to be here. And he didn't, and I think it shows a lot, and I hope the media covers that. Because if he wants money from us, anybody who's asking us for money comes before us and asks us with respect, and he didn't. But I still would like to hear where and how much governance we have in the structure that you laid out, 14 members with four from the city.
So there are various elements to that question, because the city also has a role in approving or vetoing the elements of the capital program that relate to the New York City transit system. That goes beyond the four corners of who's in that MTA boardroom. So there's the oversight of the capital program. The city has a critical role in that. There is the day-to-day coordination in terms of the work that goes on between the MTA, New York City Transit, City OEM, for example. You know, there is a just day-to-day coordination. We carry the New York City school children back and forth to school every day.
So you believe that there is an equal governance in the MTA?
I agree with the chairman when he suggested that there should be a 50-50 split.
No, I said, do you believe there's equal governance with the MTA when it comes to city and the state?
I'm not prepared today to tick through all of the different elements. I just
so you're prepared to say we should give 50-50 funding, but you're not prepared to say that we have 50-50 governance?
Correct, because I don't think it's necessarily a direct correlation.
I just want to make sure we got that on the record, that we don't have 50-50 governance. You're not willing to say that, but you do want 50-50 money. How much funding, in your estimation, comes from the city versus comes from the state right now?
As I said earlier, there's $1 billion in direct city aid, and then another $800 million in the urban tax, as opposed to state funding sources of $4.9 billion.
Have you read former Assemblymember Brennan's post in the Gotham Gazette?
Yes?
He goes through a lot of the other assumptions. So according to what he says it's much, much higher than that. Is what he's saying accurate or not accurate? He said about 1% of New York City transit operating funds come from outside the MTA region. He goes into a whole host of things that we pay for either directly or indirectly, including transit police. So it seemed to be a much broader.
That's the interpretation there is he's done an analysis of the sources within the sources of the monies that flow through the various entities that provide us with funding.
Isn't that important?
Pardon me?
Isn't that important? I think my time is up. So I think that's important to go to those sources. My thing is I'm not opposed, and I thank the chair for the extra time. I'm not necessarily opposed to additional money. I think we all have to play our part. What I'm opposed to is this false equivalency that the mayor, now Joe Loda, is putting there, confusing strap hangers. Because if we really want to get to the bottom of this, we should be honest on who has the governance, who has the control, and where the funding is coming from currently, and then have a joint discussion about that. That's the responsible thing to do. The irresponsible thing to do is if you have the majority of the governance and don't put the majority of the money and are asking for additional one and pretending that it's us that's holding it up, that is irresponsible, not just and disrespectful to us, but to the people who are riding the subway. And they want answers, and they want it now, and we have to give it to them honestly.
Brooklyn Councilmember Jemani Williams. Queens Councilmember Rory Lantzman asked the MTA budget director what the city's contribution to the MTA's operating expenses is, and then he asks about the composition of the MTA board, which doesn't favor New York City.
Is it fair to say that the state's contribution to the MTA capital plan, for not just this capital plan, but the last two capital plans as well, fairly dwarfs the contribution that the city has made to the MTA's capital plan? I think this year it's $8.3 billion versus $2.5 billion.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't any better in the previous two capital plans either, was it?
Well, the state has a higher contribution. I don't have those exact numbers, but it's certainly available, and that's
an Let me conclude with a question on governance. The mayor has four appointees to this board. And I know that this might be an uncomfortable question, but this is a hearing to ask uncomfortable questions sometimes. Those four appointees weren't finally all appointed and confirmed until this past June. Are you aware of the mayor's appointees, either individually or as a group, at any point in the last 3.5 years, presenting to the board in the form of a motion or a resolution or however you do business over there, hey, here's a comprehensive plan for improving the subways in New York City. Here's what it will cost, and here's what New York City can contribute to that.
Not in the MTA boardroom, no. But in fairness, I think that Commissioner Trottenberg, as part of her DOT plan, has commented in the past on opportunities for improvement of the system.
Brooklyn Councilmember Chaim Deutsch is pretty disgusted.
I just want to bring up a few issues. Number one is the Select Bus service. The MTA is planning on bringing the B-82 SBS into my district, running through Kings Highway and taking away a lot of much-needed parking spaces. So when it comes to SBS, I have a concern over the last 2 years, in particular on Nostrand Avenue, the B-44, where you have a local running and you have a Select Bus service. I have a lot of seniors that reside in particular Avenue R and Nostrand Avenue, where there are medical centers, and my district has more than 30% of the population of my district are senior citizens. And while people have to wait at the local bus service, those buses come very late, extremely late, because I know the drivers were issued 44 citations for not running on time. And this is going back and forth with the MTA. I don't have to babysit and stand out at the bus stop and let you know of how many times the buses run late. Now, while people are waiting for the local senior citizens, people with disabilities in wheelchairs in the rain, sleet, snow, warm heat, and everything, all types of weathers, you can have five Select bus service drivers going down Nostrand Avenue, empty. The only ones in the bus is the driver. And if that bus ran on its own, you would even have the driver in the car, in the bus. So people are waiting at the bus stop while waiting for the local stop, and five or sometimes six Select bus services drive by. So my request for the last 2 years was to have another stop of Select bus service at the corner of Avenue R and Nostrand Avenue. And the answer keeps on coming back, no. We all teach our children that if you're on a bus and there's no seats available, you stand up for a senior or someone or a person with disability. Here you have drivers passing people, waiting outside in all kinds of weathers, and just leaving them outside waiting for that late local bus to arrive. That is unacceptable. That is one issue which I would like to address, not for you to tell me we'll look into it. For the last 2.5 years, I've been hearing the same garbage. Number two is that in southern Brooklyn, where I represent Sheepshead Bay, Brighton Beach, Manhattan Beach, and even my partnering district, Councilmember Mark Tregan, Coney Island, our MTA trains and the buses are unreliable. We just had a train derailment just 3 weeks ago on a Friday in my district. And when you talk about accessibility, right, then you force people to keep their vehicles or to buy vehicles, and that makes it a problem with finding parking that causes congestion. I have been requesting from the MTA for the last 3.5 years to give us parking underneath the train trestle at West Brighton, where you could put thousands of parking spaces underneath. But instead, you have overgrown weeds, which is a fire hazard. Your same boilerplate response to me is that we had a Harlem fire under the tracks and we will not allow any parking under the tracks. But guess what? In Upper Manhattan, under the number one train, at 126th Street, you have parking under the tracks. In Queens, you have parking. On Brighton Beach Avenue, you have parking. On 86th Street, you have parking. On McDonald Avenue, you have parking. So why can't you allow that if your service is unreliable, why can't you allow those that do have vehicles with seniors and people with disability that need to carpool others to give us that parking? Why is it the same boilerplate response that we cannot do it? Unacceptable. Unacceptable. You guys do not care about the people. You guys care about sugarcoating every complaint that you get, and that is unacceptable.
Well, I think the purpose of the hearing was for us to talk about the need for an emergency action plan around subway recovery, which I hope demonstrates an acknowledgement that we do care about our customers and we do care about people. With respect to
you guys do not know how to spend a dime. How are you going to spend billions of dollars? I have one train that has handicapped accessibility. You should go to West 8th Street, right off of Neptune Avenue. You have 70, at least 70 stairs to walk up. I have to help seniors schlep up the stairs and come back down. Unacceptable. Sheepshead Bay Road, unacceptable. You guys only care about yourself, not about others. If you would, you would come to a town hall meeting within the next 2 weeks in my district. The same response I get from the MTA each time. MTA is not a city agency. We can't do anything. You guys are unreliable, unresponsive, and you don't care about anyone except for your own jobs. Thank you. I don't need a response anymore.
Transportation Chair Councilmember Yadonis Rodriguez says to create a 21st century transit system, all options should be explored.
How important is to deal with this, to come out from the crisis where we are at the MTA for the private sector in New York City?
I think we view the subway system as the economic engine, the lifeblood of the city of New York. I think everybody recognizes that if the subway system is not functioning well, business suffers, retail suffers, people suffer because they can't get to their appointments or their schools or their jobs.
And of course, like, I know that you guys as a team, you know, you hear feedback from riders, associated with the, from academics to the business community. So I was having a conversation like a few weeks ago with some members of the real estate that also they understand that everyone should be on the table to do more, because our transit system that moves 6 million people every day is not just important for working class or the middle class, but it's also, it's for the economy of our city. And they get it, especially those renting luxury apartments, that those new tenants, some of them who are living in London, because after 9/11, New York City, thanks God, has not been having any terrorist attack. So we have become one of the safest cities in the world. And we are attracting not only working class, but that percentage of individual that is coming from different places, from Asia, from Europe, and they expect that they will get similar train system as they have in London, as they have in Tokyo, as they have in Hong Kong. So are we in a place where we can take advantage of this crisis and all sectors should be, you know, be able to think out of the box and think about it not only on the governmental contribution from the city and the state, but from the private sector to say we can do our share in this particular moment?
So heretofore, I think that's a great point. And Chair, there have been very limited experiences where the private sector, through development, has invested in transit. One Vanderbilt, there are some examples, the extension of the number 7 out to Hudson Yards.
But I get it. This, and I believe in your leadership, and I hope that you can keep having high-level leadership with the MTA. But for me, it's more, I want to move from the business as usual. For me, this is about, I get it, but there's only like a thousand more reasons on how we can explain how we've been running the largest transportation system in the whole world. And yes, it's not the, we cannot say that it's the worst when it comes to moving New Yorkers and tourists 24 hours to many communities, even though we also have to address the transportation desert. But for me, it's about thinking out of the box. Mm-hmm. When you meet with those individuals who also made major contribution, they have made a contribution. But what is the commitment that they have to do more? To say we can make as New Yorkers, you know, the transportation system should be better than London, should be better than Canada. should be better than Tokyo. Are we getting that energy, you know, that fire from those sectors to say, here we are, yes, we have contributed, but we are ready to contribute more?
In terms of development, I think that's a great opportunity. Recently, as part of this recovery plan, we've also introduced the idea of a subway partnership program in order to elicit support from the private sector, and look forward to, hopefully, interested corporate sponsors.
Yeah, because my thing is, especially as I highlighted from the beginning, I believe that all proposals that we have on the table right now will allow to raise $27 billion in the next 10 years. If you take controller proposal, it's $2 billion, and we will hear from her later on. If you take Dinoish proposal, that's like a $2 billion. If you work together with the Plan Move New York, that's $10 billion in the next 10 years. If we ask the 32,000 New Yorkers to contribute 27,000 more every year, it's not a penalty. It's not going after those who are doing well. We congratulate them. It's about, are they ready? Are they open to have this conversation on, if we contribute more, this is not that we're helping the working class. It's that we're helping ourselves. Because they also work in the real estate. They work in the private sector. They work in Wall Street. They have good jobs. But do they get it that investment also will be used to make our transition a 21st century one?
No, as was discussed earlier, I think there are a lot of ideas on the table, and hope that something good comes out of the discussion.
Voices from the New York City Council's Transportation Committee hearing into the MTA. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York. Mayor Bill de Blasio has made affordable housing one of the central concerns of both his administration and his reelection campaign. However, at City Hall today, a number of New Yorkers, many who have personally struggled with homelessness, gathered to highlight a major failing of the city's housing assistance programs. Matt Patterson was at City Hall, and he sends this report.
It's the voucher system. It is failing New Yorkers. Today, members of Vocal New York, some homeless themselves, gathered on the steps of City Hall to shine light on the problem they are having securing housing. Several dozen affordable housing advocates held enormous printouts of Craigslist ads listing apartments across the city. So many vacant apartments, but somewhere on each ad there was a line that told these would-be tenants that their money was no good here.
And I would just look for apartments that were in like a voucher range for like $1,500, $1,200, and then I would read the descriptions and then I would just document if it explicitly said no vouchers or no programs, or if it would say something like we only accept Section 8, which is still discriminating against other folks who are, say they have HASA or something, right?
Asamiya Diaby is an intern with Vocal New York, the advocacy group that organized the rally. She spent the summer cataloging these illegal postings.
It is so obvious, it's so rampant. I did very basic searches. They were not even trying to hide the discrimination. It was just right in your face. I was shocked. I just had to like keep confirming that, wait, is this illegal? Is this illegal?
It is, in fact, illegal and has been since 2008. That's when the city council made discrimination by source of income a violation of the New York City human rights law. Any New York City landlord who owns at least one building with six or more units must accept vouchers in all of their buildings. And all real estate brokers must accept clients who intend to pay for their housing with vouchers. But in reality, these laws are continually broken. In September 2014, the de Blasio administration created LINC, the Living in Communities Rental Assistance Program, to help move families out of shelters and into stable housing. But that program isn't working because of landlords who are not accepting vouchers. Ruby Carrasquillo, a community leader at Vocal New York, has been trying to find LINC housing. 3 years ago, she lost her apartment and has been in the shelter system ever since. She says that she was hopeful when she received a LINC voucher 6 months ago, but she is no longer optimistic about her chances of leaving the shelter.
Last week, I paid $40 for a real estate agent to take me to an open house to see an apartment because they take vouchers. When I got there, it was a one-bedroom apartment. The rent was good, $1,200. I even get more than that for my voucher. But there was 30 other people there to see the apartment. Out of 30 of us, 27 of us had vouchers. Who do you think they picked? The person paying cash.
The New York City Commission on Human Rights is charged with enforcing these laws. Seth Hoy, the spokesperson for the commission, says the commission has significantly increased enforcement actions against violators, including subpoenaing third-party websites to identify those posting discriminatory ads and initiating enforcement against them. The commission is currently investigating 230 cases of lawful source of income discrimination, up from only 22 in 2014. Anyone with tips or information regarding housing discrimination should bring them to the New York City Commission on Human Rights by calling their hotline at 718-722-3131. That's 718-722-3131. Matt Patterson, WBAI News, New York.
And finally, the death of two singers. Glenn Campbell, known for hits like Rhinestone Cowboy, has died. He was 81 years old, diagnosed back in 1981 with Alzheimer's. And Barbara Cook died this morning of respiratory failure, surrounded by family and friends. She was 89 years old. The legendary soprano's career spanned more than 60 years. Marquees of Broadway theaters in New York will be dimmed in her memory tomorrow evening. Here she is singing Goodnight, Someone. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.